My name is Melissa Campanelli, and I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration, and I want to welcome you all to today's live ROI webinar, 5 Ways to Increase Online Customer Conversion This Holiday Season, sponsored by NanoRep. Why do so many people get cold feet before completing an online purchase during the holiday season? And wouldn't it be great if you could identify in advance and address those issues that are most likely to cause people to change their minds? Even a small modification to your site can make a significant difference this holiday season. In today's webinar, noted e-commerce conversion expert Tim Ash will walk you through 5 ways to increase your online customer conversions this season. Then Orly Mager, the Business Development Director of NanoRep, will continue the discussion with additional best practices around online customer conversions. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark or let us know via the Q&A box. And here's a quick tip. Common problems like the loss of sound and or a stall in the slides can often be fixed by a quick refresh of your browser. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists, and we'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour. But please know that you can send them in at any time. Also, please make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can use all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. With that, I'd like to introduce you to Tim Ash. Take it away, Tim.
Oh, well, thanks so much, Melissa. It's great to be here again. Folks, please tweet this in addition to doing the Q&A, if you like. The hashtag, as you can see, is ROI webinar, and my personal hashtag is going to be on the bottom of all of the slides. Okay, let's get rolling. A little bit about what we're going to talk about. I just want to say that I'm the CEO of SiteTuners. We're an agency based in San Diego, California, working with companies worldwide, and our perspective really comes from working across all industries, and we have extensive e-commerce experience and can help companies both large and small in a variety of ways and get more bang for the buck out of their websites or landing pages. Okay, well, enough about that. What I'm here to tell you are 5 quick ways that you can jumpstart what's left of the rest of the year. I know that for a lot of you, fourth quarter is a very, very important time, and we're going to see if we can maximize that with some quick tips. All right, my first tip has to do with recovering abandoned carts. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I think it's pretty common that 50 to 70% of people that put something in their shopping cart never actually check out. Now, you could say, that's not fair, that really what you're talking about is people that put in something in the cart for price comparison or as a reference to come back to later as a convenient way of adding something to their wish list, in effect. And that's certainly true. But a lot of people just don't complete your checkout process for a variety of reasons, some of them not even having to do with your site. For example, they were interrupted. The phone rang. The dog barked. The baby's crying. I mean, they're in the real world when they're sitting in front of the browser as well. So how do you get those folks to come back? Well, a very powerful technique is to do that via email. So what are the things that you typically do is send a follow-up sequence to folks. It looks a little something like this. This is an example from Smiley Cookies. And immediately after you left, they send you a, oops, what's wrong email. Was there a problem with your checkout? And they give you a number of things to do, but of course, front and center, you can hardly miss it, is that complete my order big button. And that reinserts you into the process of basically wherever you left off with your order, whatever was in your cart, it kind of resets you back to that state. So basically, that the important thing here is that you need to do this immediately. Because you want to catch them while they're still at their desk or right, while they're still in front of their computer in the same mindset and interested in buying whatever it is you have. But that's not just kind of a one-stop strategy. You have to hit them again. Now, what we typically recommend is doing that a day later. exactly a day later, because if I'm somewhere, say it's 6 o'clock at home, or maybe in my lunch hour at work, 24 hours later, I'm much more likely to be in that same exact situation. So hitting me in that exactly 24 hour later time frame is perfect. So then you might have a different offer. In this case, what Smiley Cookie decided to do was to actually have a 10% off discount. And a week later, again, I think that we're talking about catching people in the same circumstance. For example, if they happen to be at home on the weekend, you're more likely to reach them the following weekend and so on. Whereas a day later, if they were at home, they might be back in the office or vice versa. And then that's kind of your last-ditch effort. And you might want to have a more significant discount. This is your last shot at getting them. Now, there is a bit of a risk to this. If you condition people to doing this, they're going to kind of wait for your best and final offer, if you will. Is that your final answer? Is that the lowest price you're going to give me? So it helps to have this kind of escalating time frame from immediately to a day to a week later. Many people aren't willing to wait a week just to get a discount. So this is only saved for the diehards in a final attempt to try to reactivate them. Now, email's great, and you should get emails, as you'll see, as soon in the process as possible is going to be my recommendation in a minute. But you can also leverage this by going beyond email, going to ad retargeting. Now, for those of you not familiar with retargeting, basically, you've probably seen it. You visit a website, all of a sudden, on Facebook and on other popular sites, the banner ads all seem to speak to you. In fact, they're very, very targeted. And what's happening is somebody's following you around, in effect, and showing you ads from a site of interest that you'd previously visited. So here's an example of that. As you're going to see later in the presentation, one of the examples I gave was going to the Home Depot site and looking for a clawfoot bathtub. So that's later on. But after I did that, on Facebook, I started being stalked by this sponsored ad. It said shop on HomeDepot.com, but it wasn't just shoponhomedepot.com, it was actually tied to the specific product that I had looked at, the product detail page that I last visited. So this is very sophisticated stuff. And if you think it doesn't matter, it's not true. I mean, there's the old saw that you need to be exposed to 17 marketing impressions before you're moved to act. I'm not sure where that arbitrary number came out of, but I'm sure that there is clear evidence, actually, that the more touch points someone has with you, the more likely they are to buy. So to stay top of mind, even after they've left your site, by doing retargeting is a very, very powerful kind of add-on to the email aspect of abandonment recovery. Okay, and of course, once they buy, you stop hassling them, both via email and via ads. All right, so just to kind of sum up some of the best practices on recovering abandoned carts. The key to this, of course, is you need to have an email. And some of us have a checkout process that may be 3 or 4 screens long, and at the very end, we might ask for an email. Others do this at the very beginning. It's not atypical to, say, kind of create an account or register now, where you ask for an email and a password up front. I'm not sure that kind of register now is the best idea in the world, but certainly asking for an email on the first screen is important, and as early in the process as possible. In fact, you know, many people say, well, you know, what if they don't finish that first screen and hit the submit button? Well, you can get this email just on a change of focus. In other words, once they leave the email field, as long as there's a valid email in there and they've gone on to the next field in the form, behind the scenes, you can send that to yourself. So you can kind of save intermediate progress on the form before the full form is filled out. Now, some of you might be thinking about kind of the ethics of this or requirements for opt-in or even double opt-in email list if you want to be squeaky clean. Well, remember, if this is done only for the very limited purpose of reactivating their cart or telling them or reminding them that they left something in the cart, you're not using it to market anything else. You're just saying you had a session going on our site, you know, come back and complete the session. My understanding is that's well clear into the white zone. It's not a gray area or certainly not kind of black hat tactics. And if there's a lawyer in the audience, you can correct me, but again, there's whole businesses based on this. So it's okay to get that email early in the process as long as you only use it for the purposes of just reactivating that user session or whatever's in that cart. Again, the next thing I talked about is a 3-email typically recovery sequence, immediate, a day later and a week later. And folks, when I mean immediate, there are specialized companies like CY that specialize in this that are whitelisted with all the major internet service providers and mail delivery services. It's important that get through right away. This is not something that can be batched and done an hour later. It's not something that can even wait 15 minutes. Immediate means immediate. As soon as they've left your site, boom, that email's in their inbox. And the same goes with the timing on a day later and a week later. Now, one caveat, again, there's specialized firms that do this for a reason. What you don't want to do is to have somebody come back and respond to your immediate oops email and then come get another email a day later offering 10% off and a week later offering 20% off. Imagine being on the receiving end of something like that. You'd feel like a total ass that you could have gotten a lower price and you got snookered into buying at a higher price. So it's really important as soon as they've actually transacted and completed their transaction that you stop and do not do any more communication for that purpose or this kind of recovery sequence. It's just going to make you look bad and make them feel horrible. And as I mentioned, this is not just limited to email. You can do this with retargeting as well. All right, let's go on to the second way of increasing conversion this holiday season. Instant gratification. This is the holiday season. This is the present season. This is the gift-giving season. And we want it now. We want that shiny toy, whether it's an Xbox for the kids or, you know, a Rolex watch for ourselves or a nice, you know, Prada handbag for the lady in our life, whatever that is. We want it now, and the expectation of responsiveness has gotten faster and faster and faster. You know, we won't stick around for a fraction of a second on a slow-loading website. In terms of delivery, we've had kind of standard delivery. We have two-day delivery. We have next-day delivery. Well, guess what Amazon's doing and also Google in some selected markets? They're having same-day delivery. So that gap between the store and the physical store and your online store is really, really shrinking if you can get that stuff dialed in. The reason that I buy something in a store with limited selection and higher prices and everything else is that I can walk out of the store with whatever it is. That's a very powerful thing. Well, if I can get it in a few hours later from Amazon, of course we don't all have their distribution power or reach, but that's almost as good. If you're going to make me wait a long time, psychologically, that just doesn't work for me. So you really have to emphasize, instant gratification. So, for example, I was on the Adorama site, and I'm kind of a camera buff and a photographer. So I'm looking at this camera body, and it's wonderful. Okay, it looks like it's got everything. It has a Nikon authorized dealer. They have a USA warranty, and all this, the price seems good, free shipping in the USA, fantastic. Do you have any idea when I'm going to get this camera? I didn't either. This whole page does not tell me at all whether they have them in stock, how long it's going to take me to get it, and when I'm going to have that gratification of holding that new digital camera in my hot little hands. So this is awful because they're just not telling me the time frame, either the availability or the time frame for the delivery. Now, by contrast, let's take a look at Abes of Maine. They sell camera gear and do pretty good online business. Well, you can see in that kind of right-hand side of the slide, you know, their action block, free shipping, availability, available. It's a little bit of from the Department of Redundancy Department. Availability is available. But anyway, they have the price. And so at least I know that they have it in stock. And so that gives me a much, much stronger cue. And it builds up, more importantly, desire on my part in order to get it because I know they have it in stock because a lot of people have low price but something may be back order. Well, that's not the case here. They have it available. They're telling me that very clearly in big green letters. So if you had kind of think about best practices around this notion of instant gratification, in big green letters, not red, because red's a warning, put in stock, really big in that kind of action area, in that action block where I'm going to order it on the product detail page. If something is unavailable, then give me at least a heads up. I may be willing to wait. I probably won't, and I'm going to shop your competitor's site anyway. But if you say, currently out of stock, we expect the next shipment in 1 week. Okay? Or currently, you know, available for pre-order, will ship on such and such a date. The more information you can give me as the visitor, the more intelligent of a decision I can make. In the absence of information, I'm just going to assume if it's out of stock or unavailable or pre-ordered, not given any time frame, I'm just going to assume that the time frame is never, because I just left your site. It's also important to kind of do this 1-2 punch and combine the two, because really I don't care the time it takes you to mess around in your warehouse and pack and ship it versus the shipping time. I really care about when I'm going to get it, as I said, my hot little hands. So to combine it is very, very powerful. You can say things like, in stock, 2-day shipping available. And you see that gives me both the availability and the time frame. And that goes to your operational efficiencies as well. You should be able to, again, unless there's some huge surge around the holidays, process and pack orders and get them out the same day. And even if it's not often used, you should offer a super fast option, whatever that means to you, and just pass that cost on to the consumer. Yeah, your normal shipping might be even free, or 2-day shipping might be free. But if you want, again, next day shipping or international express shipping or something like that, there's a lot of people that if they've chosen you are going to appreciate that instant gratification angle and are, in fact, willing to pay a lot more for it. People buy for different reasons. For example, I like to use the Mother's Day flowers. If you buy Mother's Day flowers 3 months in advance, you're looking for the lowest price, period. I mean, who does that? Only some very, very compulsive, let's say, control enthusiasts. But if you're like me and you're ordering a couple of days before Mother's Day because you forgot again and you just care about whether they have Saturday delivery and mom can get it on time, I'm willing to pay just about any price. I'm not the price-sensitive one in that situation. So having that super-fast shipping option, even if it's something that gets rarely used, at best, you can actually make some money on the shipping and even mark that up. Worst case scenario, you just made extra sales to people that are looking for that convenience and just pass the cost through to them without any markup. All right, let's talk about free shipping. I think in e-commerce, it's pretty much the standard. I think it's not a question of whether you have it, but under what conditions. Now, some companies offer free shipping on all of their products. If that's feasible for you, great. Some even offer return free shipping, which is fantastic because it takes all of the kind of risk out of the purchase of the consumer. If you combine that with a liberal return policy and free return shipping, and more people are willing to kind of try things on for size and maybe increase the number of orders or average order value as a result of that. Or the lifetime value of the relationship with them and their order frequency, because you get used to that convenience. But most of us can't necessarily afford to do that. Most of us have something more like what Best Buy has. So on their page here in the middle, it says free shipping, orders 25 and up. Okay, well, that's great. And that alerts me to the fact that that's site-wide. And one of the things that I've found is that it really depends on your industry in terms of where that price break really should go. It also depends on your cost structure and the variety of stuff you sell. Some of your stuff may have very low profit margins. Others have very high profit margins. So you have to take that into account when doing it. But one thing I did notice on Best Buy, I was looking for computer cables for my USB drive. And so I clicked through on the cables and connectors category. Now, I know this is maybe a little bit hard to see, but if you actually look at all of the items. These are the first ones that came up. I didn't do anything special with this screenshot. One thing I want you to note is, guess what the price is on all three of these? $24.99. Now, do you remember what the, on the last page, what we had with the free shipping, what the cutoff was? Yes, indeed, $25 and up. So you think it's a coincidence that this product, they first show you the cable connectors are not eligible for free shipping? They're one penny below that threshold. No, I'm thinking that's not a coincidence at all. Now, you might do something similar and consider at what kind of breakpoints or volumes or how many items ordered. If that makes sense for you, they're going to trip that. Or you can just think about it just in terms of average order size. Let's talk about free shipping from another angle. Well, here I am, and I mentioned that I was looking at these clawfoot tubs as an example on Home Depot. So here I am. I typed in clawfoot tubs into their search results, got this page. There's 483 products, but I'm just looking at the stuff that's visible to me. And I noticed that a lot of them have free shipping. Remember, folks, these are cast iron clawfoot tubs. Free shipping is a big deal. I don't want any big surprises. If you're going to take something that's chippable and weighs several hundred pounds and ship it to me, I'm guessing that's not free. So really, it's great that I'm able to get free shipping on it. I mean, of course, they build it into the price. But what about that poor little one that doesn't have free shipping? What do I do with that one? It's kind of like the odd duck out. It's not the most expensive. It's not the cheapest. And in fact, I don't really even know how much it's going to end up costing me. And that's pretty horrible. Think about that. So what do you think shipping costs? Just have a number in your head right now. Jot it down. We're going to just have a pop quiz in a second here. Just write it down right now. But what do you think it costs, the range of shipping options costs me to do? I know. I initially thought, just my own number in my head, was probably between $200 and $300 to ship a bathtub to me. Okay, and have it arrive in one piece without any chips. Well, in that case, that makes it pretty close in price to the one next to it for $14.59. So the $1,200, you tack on a couple of $100, and that one has free shipping. We're in the same ballpark. So it makes it, first of all, impossible to compare things because I don't know the all-in price, if you will. And it also creates this uncertainty and anxiety. And don't kid yourself, when we're in front of a web browser about to shell out money, especially large amounts of money, we have a physical fight or flight response. Our body, our blood pressure rises, our respiration goes up, we start sweating. You might even see your foot tapping in preparation for the flight part of fight or flight. Sitting in front of a web browser has physiological implications and can change your metabolism and your whole kind of hormone system. So, don't think this is a low stress kind of, I'm just farting around on my computer kind of stuff. So, let's explore that tub. Let's say that's really the one I wanted, the one for $11.81. And I go to the product detail page and I add it to the cart. Well, when I add it to the cart, then I get a little bit of an inkling. Now I'm getting an estimated shipping. Okay, and that says only $55. So I'm actually pleasantly surprised because, like I said, I was expecting between $200 and $300. But then I get, it's got an asterisk next to it. Estimated shipping. How are you feeling right about now? Do you trust them that their estimate is correct? They wouldn't give you that price in the first place. Now they're giving it to you as an estimate. I'm wondering how close that is, or they're just lowballing me again to try to get me to buy. So I don't necessarily get that sense of closure or certainty as a result of looking at this page either. And it's only when I actually try to buy it and I'm in the shipping step that I'm finally able to determine my true shipping costs and options. And it looks like they range from $55 to $115. Don't know what any of those things are. I mean, I can kind of guess from the name, but threshold home shipping versus basic home shipping. Any of you can figure that one out? Threshold, I guess if there's a set of stairs, they'll carry it up on your porch, put it on your threshold. I assume that's what that means. I'm guessing white glove means they bring it into the house, set up the clawfoot tub, plug in the plumbing, or maybe not, or maybe just put it in the bathroom part, at least get it that far. A little hard to tell. It'd be nice to have some description of these shipping methods and what other services are included. But in any case, at least at this point, I can finally get my all-in price. But did you see what I had to do? I had to start the checkout process in order to do that. And that's the disadvantage of not having free shipping. You know, you might have technical reasons why you can't tell me the shipping, or I have to tell you my zip code first before you can tell me what the exact shipping is and all that business. And that's, you know, that's bad for you. It's hard to implement, but it's even worse for your visitor because they're left in this pool of uncertainty and paralyzed and not making a decision. And they're going to actually prefer other products if you do have free shipping on those to this one. So you're actually impacting the sales of this one. By the way, this was the retargeting ad that followed me around because I had added this that particular tub to my cart, and I said I got that assault on Facebook. I'm sure for the next week or until I say that ad's not relevant, I'm going to be followed around by Clawfoot tubs all over the place. And by the way, there's really no excuse for this as far as I can tell. Just, I'm sorry, but, you know, Home Depot, you know, bring it up a notch. The first tub that you see there in the first column is Barclay Products. The last one is Barclay Products. The column that doesn't have the free shipping, Barclay Products. I mean, they're from the same manufacturer, so it's really a little bit bizarre to me that these guys don't have free shipping on that particular item. All right, well, let's go on to another example of how free shipping can play into your money-making strategy. Now, here I am. This is on another site. I'm checking out, this is a cosmetic site, some kind of Royal Brush value pack of assorted brushes, and it's pretty inexpensive. It's only $5, but they're notifying me here in the cart. They have free shipping at $50, so, hey, spend another $44.51 and get free shipping. Now, that's a little, perhaps that's not likely to work, you could say, because you have, they're asking me to spend 10 times as much. You could do this a little more intelligently. And if I'm within a certain percentage threshold of your free shipping or a certain dollar amount, then you suggested, hey, spend another $6 more, and then it's all free shipping. So you have the business rules, and you know, that's something that I would experiment with to see which one yields the best. But that's another way to kind of take advantage of free shipping is to, since it's such a powerful motivator to actually get people to spend more to get the free shipping, even though it may not cost you that much in the first place. So depending on what you ship, how heavy it is, where you're shipping it to, that might be a really good strategy for you to try. All right, so to kind of sum up the best practices for the free shipping is clearly indicate what your free shipping threshold is. Again, unless you have blanket free shipping, which is, you know, wonderful, of course, then you should be trumpeting that from the rooftops. And that depends on your profit margin, your average sale amount, the economics and competitiveness of your business, all of that. So you have to decide what that threshold is. Now, one of the things that you can do is you can actually increase your average order value by setting that threshold just above the most commonly brought products or price points. And again, maybe that gets them to, hey, get another one, or to buy another kind of upsell idea. We'll talk about upsells in a minute here, along with the main item. And remind people about the incremental amount to reach that free shipping threshold. All right, let's move on to my tip number 4, which is convince people with user reviews. Now, one thing that we know, of course, is that human beings are very social animals. Some people say that Robin Dunbar did this research and looked at the kind of the brain size, the modern brain size of different kind of mammals, and it was very highly correlated with the complexity of the social groups that we form. So there's strong evidence to suggest that the size of our brains is directly linked to the tribal size and having the knowledge of everyone in our tribal group. So we're social animals. We're influenced by social behavior. If you're in front of two restaurants, one has a line out the door and the other one is empty, which one are you going to go to? Well, ironically enough, you're going to probably stand in line because you go, oh, that must be good. Well, why did you just do that? That's because the line out the door was a shortcut to your decision-making, being social creatures, saying, yeah, I'd consider that restaurant. Look, all these other people are waiting in front of it. You're basically using that as a substitute or some kind of external cue for your own decision-making process. And we like to do a lot of things on autopilot, so it's not surprising that we look for these kind of visual or environmental cues. So we're just saying, hey, lots of people obviously like this restaurant, must be a good restaurant. And it's kind of circular reasoning. I don't know if you've ever been to a nightclub and there's a line outside the door and everybody wants to get in, and then you get in, it's not anywhere near full capacity. They weren't keeping people outside for fire code reasons or because they're too full. I mean, I guess that's possible too. But regardless, they'll keep a line out the door to create that perception of, you know, social proof of the popularity of the club. So let's see how we can use that to our advantage as well. Well, here's Zappos, the shoe site, and they very prominently feature, as you can see it right below the title of the page and the nice, and right above the big picture of the shoes, the rating and how many reviews that's based on. Now, that's great. So that gives me instant validation. And who do I care about in this context? Do I care about my kids' opinions about these shoes, my parents' opinions about these shoes, my friends' opinions about these shoes? Probably none of the above. But if I like them and I like the way they look, I care about the opinions of other people that have bought them. That, situationally, for the moment, is my peer group. That's my comparable people. Those are the ones that I'm more in tune with and inclined to listen to. So knowing that this is rated 5 out of 5 stars and based on a pretty large number of reviews gives me very strong cues that I can kind of dispense with my decision-making process and know that I'm still going to get a good outcome. All right. Well, and those 69 reviews, there's rating component to the reviews, and then there's written text. A lot of times people want the details of why was this good or why was it not good. And we get asked all the time about testimonials. Well, should we just knock out the low-rated ones? And, you know, we just want to keep a squeaky, clean reputation, and all of our products are wonderful. Well, no, you shouldn't. You see this on Amazon. You're seeing it here on Zappos as well. They have the top positive review and the top critical review. I want the good and the bad as long as it's the honest truth. And that also brings up another important point, which is that you should let your visitors rate the reviews themselves. Was this helpful to you, yes or no? And so basically over time, what should happen if you have enough reviews going on is that the cream kind of rises to the top. The most thoughtful reviews, the more informative reviews are going to get flagged as being helpful and get promoted to the top of the reviews and be of even more use to even more people by being more visible. So it's kind of a virtuous cycle. That has a downside I'll talk about, which is don't base ratings on too few reviews. I'll talk about that in a minute. All right, so the best practices to kind of create this social proof, if you will, and see what my peers are up to is if you can at all, please set up some kind of review and rating functionality on your own site, or if that's an external plugin, if that's a module you have to turn on in your e-commerce software, whatever it is. And so reviews and ratings. If you can't do that, if you don't have the volume, then you should work with ePinions or one of these third-party review sites and actually suck in their reviews. Now, of course, this only works if you're talking about consumer products that are widely available, electronics, some clothes, shoes, and things like that that are sold through a lot of outlets. If you have a unique product or that only you make or only you distribute, then obviously you can't get third-party reviews and plug them into your site. So you should do everything you can to develop your own reviews. So prominently feature them. As you could see in the case of Zappos, they put it very clearly above the fold of the page in the first visual screen full and showed you exactly, you know, with that kind of drawing your attention to it, the 5 yellow stars were just a strong visual cue. As I said, don't try to get rid of the negative stuff. Put it out there. People appreciate that you have both negative and positive reviews. They're going to trust you more because they see negative reviews and it's not just all, you know, wine and roses. And remember, as long as you're trusted, which of your products they buy, in a sense, doesn't matter. Well, one's got lower reviews, another one's got higher reviews. They're on your site, though, getting those reviews and trusting you to deliver those reviews. Okay, so they're going to buy something from you most likely. And as I mentioned, allow feedback on the reviews themselves so that the best ones can percolate to the top. Now, this is an important nuance, and I see a lot of people doing this wrong. The ratings. Ratings can be deceiving, and they can also, you know, undermine the growth or sales of a potentially, you know, solid product. For example, let's just say I have an axe to grind, and or I had some really awful experience, but it was very atypical with the product. But I'm the first one to review it, so I give it 1 star out of 5. Well, everybody that's just going to look at it in a product grid or on a search results page or with a quick scan, they're not going to see how many reviews that's based on. They're just going to look at the visual cue of the star ratings, and they're going to go, oh, that one really sucks. It has 1 star out of 5. And there's other 3, 4, and 5 stars things going on over here. Well, you know, but those are based maybe on a reasonable sample size of reviews. If you have 20, 30 reviews, you can start talking about ratings averages. But if you have one review, you shouldn't be showing ratings at all. It's better to have nothing than to have a negative review, which might kill the sales momentum of that particular item. All right, let me just wrap this up with my final tip, which is cross-selling and upselling. And this is something that you can see REI doing very well. Here's a very expensive mountaineering jacket they have, and lower down on the page, they say, you know, you might also consider these. At the bottom of the page, they say people have also bought or looked at the following. So they're putting it right there on the product detail page. Another place you can put it is in the add to cart. Now look at what Macy's is doing. I just tried to add this jacket to the checkout, and it's confirming that I did that, but also to the right of it says you might also like. So there's a cross sell or upsell. And you can see behind it on the main body of the page, it also had cross sells available. So they're kind of doing it in two places, on the product detail page and on the cart add confirmation pop-up dialog box. Now those cart confirmations can also be just a fixed page on the site. That's how Walmart does it. When you add it to a cart, you actually get a page that says we've added the following item to your cart. And right below it, it says there's people who bought this item also bought. There's a cross sells that are pretty typical. So one thing to watch out for here is this, it's kind of the same gotcha. Don't rely on the technology or just always show the cross sells. For example, I was putting this kind of LED candle into the cart, and is giving me the cart summary and the light box. And down below, it had the suggested cross-sells. Well, one of them was another LED candle, but one of them was some kind of makeup blusher brush. I didn't want that at all. I was buying a candle. So this is an example of, I think, a kind of off-target cross-sell. It's probably based on too little information. So, again, your cross-sells should have a high degree of confidence if they're not based on reasonable or large numbers of people that have been cross-sold in that situation. You probably shouldn't just show random stuff that actually takes away from the experience. So don't trust the technology completely. To kind of sum up this section, I'd say with regard to cross-sells and upsells, you have to decide which is appropriate to you. Do you sell one main item that has a bunch of accessories, or do you sell kind of comparable items in different price ranges, in which case you might want to upsell me to a different one, or maybe a combination of the two. It's really critical to test where this stuff actually happens, the placement. Are you doing it on the product page itself, the add-to-cart confirmation pop-up, in the cart, during the checkout process? And this is also an underutilized tactic that I've seen, which is the post-completion. When you're actually on the confirmation page, post-purchase page, you can take another bite in the apple and suggest some more cross-sells. And again, don't trust the automation completely. Make sure that all the alternatives that appear in cross-sells or upsells are reasonable. All right, so here's a kind of a recap of what we talked about. Recover abandoned carts, emphasize instant gratification, offer free shipping, convince users, convince with user reviews, and cross-sell or upsell. I want to throw out a quick offer. If you'd like us to take a quick look at your site and triage it, we have either 45 or 90-minute reviews available. And if you go to Express Review Offer by Friday and use the promo code NANOREP, we'll give you $200 off of that review. Again, that's Express Review Offer NanoRep.com, and NanoRep is the code. And as I might have mentioned, I'm the chairperson of the Worldwide Conversion Conference. We just wrapped up our great event in Boston and London, and I'm going to be in Berlin next week. So if you're interested, our 2014 schedule, San Francisco in March, Chicago in June, and Boston in October. If you want to drink from the fire hose and learn everything there is to know about conversion from the top practitioners, kind of check it out and give us a holler. All right. Melissa, I'm going to throw it back to you.
Great. Thanks so much, Tim. As usual, great information. And I know there's a lot of questions, but we're going to get to them in a minute. Next, we have Orly Mager from the Business Development Director at NanoRep, who is going to continue the discussion on best practices around conversions this holiday season. So take it away, Orly.
Thank you very much. In this part of the webinar, I'm going to share practical solutions on how to improve conversion that are used by many large e-commerce and small e-commerce organizations. My name is Orly Mager, and I'm the Business Development Director here at NanoRep. And just briefly, NanoRep is a leader in automated online customer service solutions, and we enable e-commerce and online retailers to increase conversion and reduce their support costs. So let's get started with the presentation. We believe that customer service is key to conversion. Unfortunately, some organizations still view their customer service department as an added cost, and they don't really realize the full potential of their customer service agents and how they can really influence the buying decision. Let's start and really think about what influences the buying decisions or how shoppers make buying decisions on the web. There are three main factors in the decision-making process. We're looking at price, selection, and service. Now, let's face it. There's a lot of different stores out there that sell similar items at similar price. Therefore, selection and price are becoming less and less of a differentiator, and it really leaves us with service. Great customer service is what helps you really spread the word, increases brand recognition and loyalty, and it allows you to charge premium pricing. Customer service is critical, especially when price and selection are less of a differentiator. So you really have to provide excellent customer service to be a key player. So let's move to the tips. This presentation focuses on practical tips. Those are tips that help you to increase conversion through better customer service. Each tip is a solution that can be implemented quickly, so you can see results. Actually, if you take action very quickly, you can see results this holiday season. To start generating revenues from customer service, you need to provide excellent service at every point of conversion. You have to offer service that eliminates buyers' hesitation and provides answers every step of the way. If your customers reach the cart with open questions, forget it. They're most likely going to abandon and they're not going to purchase. The first tip is customer service at the point of conversion. Customer service really cannot be hidden in help pages. It must be easily accessible. Each website has few points of conversion. This is where shoppers decide whether they continue shopping or not. This is where you have to instill trust and virtually hold their shopper's hand. There's a lot of hype about shopping cart abandonment and really not enough focus at the product page. Like Tim said, the majority of your customers abandon the website before they even reach the shopping cart. It's really not fair, and it happens straight from your product pages. So this is where you really want to offer help and answers to questions. So customers don't reach a cart with open questions. The second tip is about increasing purchases with immediate answers to inquiries. So this is really how you do it. You can provide great customer service at the product page with an embedded widget. Each product page actually has its own Q&A, which is generated automatically and dynamically. Customers can view the details of the product Q&A without even leaving the page or searching through categories, which I personally find extremely annoying. They can ask questions in their own language, and if there is an answer in the system, the system will provide it automatically. If not, they can always email or chat with the rep if you provide chat. And also, in our next release, questions like what's my order status, which is a very, very common question, we see that a lot, will get a response based on information in the back office system. So people are going to get automated response very quickly knowing what's their order status. So in summary, shoppers must get comprehensive and rich data on the spot. You cannot interrupt their flow. In this example, I also like to talk about immediate answers. What does it mean? Immediate answers to inquiry also means helping customers to formulate their questions. Many shoppers have really hard time formulating their questions. So it's your job to remove obstacles and objections by providing possible alternatives to questions. And you can see on the screen over here, there's a question. Maybe you can't really read it, but it asks, do you ship? And then you get all kind of options. Do you ship to Canada? Do you offer free shipping? So it really helps the shopper figure out what they really want to ask. This particular retailer is using what we call the floating customer service widget that is available on every product page. And that's how people can get answers to their question. The idea here is really to help agents focus on high-value customers and let the automated system take care of those repetitive, mundane questions like how do you ship, do you offer free shipping, and so on. In this example, I really like to emphasize the importance of feedback. Under the automated customer service widget on the top where you see ask your question, there's also an area where you can get the automated FAQ. And this is an FAQ that is generated dynamically, so it's always current and it's always up to speed. And this is where shoppers can see popular questions and what other shoppers thought about the answers. Because serious shoppers always have questions before they buy, and it's critical to give them excellent answers. And this particular feedback and rating, it's not only good for the shoppers, but it also enables your customer service and marketing to continuously improve answers that they provide on the website. I have another example over here. Customer service also means that you, and Tim just talked about it, it's about suggesting related products. In this example, what the shopper asks, they ask about moving supply. And this particular retailer, they're offering, they're providing pods or containers for shipping. And when a visitor asks about moving supply, they immediately get a link to a page where they can purchase shipping supplies. So customer service that really suggests related product will definitely increase conversion and sales. There's no doubt about it. And it's really not about being pushy. It's about providing better service and providing one-stop shopping for your customers. Let's move on to the third tip. The third tip is reduce abandonment where products are out of stock. And out-of-stock situations are extremely confusing. Everything is about instant gratification, but when you want to purchase something and it's out of stock, it dramatically affects sales. So how can you reduce abandonment when products are out of stock? One of our customers, and they're a leading home improvement store in the U.S., they faced this particular challenge. They did a Net Promoter Score survey, which shows that out-of-stock situation is a top customer complaint. Customers really weren't clear what it means. Can they purchase an out-of-stock item? Is it temporarily out-of-stock, or is it really discontinued? So when they saw a product that was out of stock, they just abandoned. And if your customer abandoned before they reached the cart or before you had the chance to collect their email address, there's really no way to recover. So it's significant revenue loss. Our solution to those out-of-stock situations were we came up with an out-of-stock FAQ that clearly explained what it means. It's rule-based. So when a product is out of stock, immediately you're going to see an out-of-stock FAQ will appear on the page. And it answers all sort of common questions. For example, when is the credit card going to be charged? Who pays for shipping? A lot of times we're in a situation that we started to complete the cart and some items are in stock and some items are out of stock. So who really pays for shipping when the item becomes available? And with the out-of-stock FAQ, shoppers really know that they can still purchase the item and there are really no surprises when they reach the cart. So it definitely helped conversion at the product page and during the checkout process. This tip over here is about using business intelligence to continuously improve conversion. Business intelligence really helps you gain valuable insight to your customers' interests, their preferences, and their questions that drive conversion. If you take a look at the top right-hand corner, you can see what shoppers ask before they buy. These are the questions that you want to focus on. You want to offer excellent answers and continuously add data to your website and even to your SEO keywords to reflect those type of topics. With NanoRep or BI, you can really make customer-driven decisions. For example, you can decide which questions get self-service, which questions you want to escalate to a live agent, and how you want to optimize your service channels and better utilize your resources. What you also see in the main part of the chart is a conversion funnel. It shows that customers that ask questions purchase 5 times more than customers that don't ask questions, and we all know that. When we're interested in a certain product, in a certain service, we have tons of questions, at least I do. If we go back to the conversion funnel, if you sum the number of shoppers that converted, over 60% of all conversions relied on NanoRep automated self-service. Basically, in other words, they needed to get their questions answered before they could complete the purchase. BI also helps your knowledge base to be accurate and relevant. Knowledge base is this is the knowledge base of answers to your customer questions, and also agents rely on your knowledge base. So it helps you keep it fresh and updated and always with the best of breed answers. So in summary, offering great customer service doesn't have to be expensive or require an army of agents. Automated solutions like our solution, NanoRep, enables conversion and really frees up time for your agents. And it allows them to provide personal service when it's really needed. So before we move on to the questions and answers, just wanted to give you a brief information about us. We are a leader in automated customer service solutions, and we were founded in 2009, and we have over 300 customers worldwide. Last year alone, 20 million online questions were answered with our system. And one of the main industries that we serve is e-commerce. Our solution fits right in with all the tips that we just provided. And at this point, I really like to thank you for listening and turn it over back to you, Melissa, and to the question and answers.
Great. Thank you so much, Orly, and also some great information. Luckily, our attendees were treated to some great information. And just so that you know, if you registered for the event, you'll be able to get the presentation, so you'll have all the notes and stuff going forward. But we do have some questions, so I'm going to try to run through these as quickly as possible because we only have about 5 minutes for them. But a lot of them have to do with Tim's presentation. So I'm just going to sort of start from top to bottom and kind of work that way, if that's okay.
Sure.
So, Tim, this one of our listeners was that we got a few questions on some of your – specifically on your ratings discussion and your retargeting mm-hmm. discussion and your abandoned cart. So those are sort of the three buckets I'm seeing here. So for the ratings, I guess you stated that you shouldn't display ratings until you have enough to average. So is there
right.
a number that's enough?
And yeah, I would say 5 to 10. Yeah, great point. So where you don't want to show the ratings is earlier on where they're going to bias it. For example, on a search results page or on a category page with the product grid where they're seeing ratings for others. It's better to have none than it is to have a low rating prematurely. So I say once you get 5 to 10, you could probably call it a quote-unquote average. And you can certainly show the individual reviews with the ratings on the product detail page itself. You should always do that. But then just don't average it for them. Just show them the raw numbers.
Right. And are we talking about reviews and ratings here in these examples? Or?
Well, the idea is that you have your format for reviews presumably has a rating assigned to it.
Okay.
And so you're forced to give a rating for every text review you write.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
that's
great.
That's pretty simple.
Yeah. Another question that is actually a good one, is, and I'm not sure if this is your specialty, but do you have any ideas about how to go about soliciting reviews from customers, or getting folks to write them for you?
Yeah, it really depends on your industry. For example, attorneys can't have a real tough time getting reviews. They're not allowed to get testimonials or have anybody say they're wonderful. For e-commerce sites, I think the best way to do it is to essentially just bribe your visitors with something that doesn't have a high cost for you. We'll give you, doggy shopping dollars on our pet supply site, and you're basically, it just costs you the wholesale price of whatever you give them. If we use your review, which guess what, that also makes them try to write more dynamic reviews. So you just put that out via an email blast, and you'd be surprised how many people will take the couple of minutes to submit them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you only pay the ones or put them into a raffle for a single prize, that sort of thing. It depends on what your scale is.
Right. Excellent. A little bit about retargeting. The question is whether or not, and I think this is correct, but with ad retargeting, you can do it with email marketing and you can retarget anyone that opens your emails, correct? Or is it based on cookies?
Well, I'm not sure of the ins and outs of retargeting, not hands-on with it, but as you saw, basically if you visit someone's site, then if they're doing display advertising, they can reach you on other websites and on Facebook, as you saw from that Home Depot example. So that's kind of what I'm advocating. I'm not sure of how it would work from an email. Don't have an answer to that.
Okay, that's okay. This is another question around emails. Do you have sort of the magic formula about how you could go about capturing emails without turning potential customers away?
Well, yeah, that's always a kind of a you should test this situation. A lot of times, the number one reason someone gives up an email, short of buying from you and needing it to track orders and so on, is basically in an e-commerce scenario, discounts, promotions, advance notice of VIP sales, that sort of thing. So if you say, hey, get our weekly discounts newsletter, I mean, that's the best way to collect it. How you collect the emails, some people get real obnoxious and they do entry pop-ups. Or exit pop-ups. You don't really have anything to lose if they're already leaving your site having not bought. So we test that. Now, personally, I hate them, but personally, it doesn't matter. What matters is, on average, does it improve things? So you should split test policy changes like that and see if it's a net benefit. You might lose a few extra people, but you might add quite a few to your mailing list. And if you can back into the numbers and the average expected value of that, you're just looking for a net positive.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Well, I think that's probably about all we have time for. So I want to make sure we end this promptly. So on behalf of NanoRep and our publication, ROI, I want to thank everyone listening for attending today's webinar. And, of course, I want to thank our wonderful speakers, Tim Ash and Orly Mager. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. So with that, I hope to see you all at the next ROI webinar. Thanks a lot, everybody.